Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Just wanted to take a brief moment to give you guys a little idea how we do it here at Paddle and Fin Podcast. We use the anchor.fm recording platform. Super easy, distributes our podcast to many, many different platforms. There's creation tools to allow you to record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. Check out anchor.fm or download the free Anchor app to get started. Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast, Episode 9. Tonight we got an epic guest joining us, Christine Fisher, also known as Midwest Fisher Girl on the Instagram world. She just recently got back from the KBF Open on Lake Erie. It was sixth place, correct?
Sixth place, yeah.
Sixth place, and yeah. We're going to talk with her this evening and kind of get her outlook on things and get the life in a woman's perspective in the fishing world these days. So, Christine, why don't you start off telling us about, how you got into fishing and kind of how the passion kind of grew with you.
Okay. Well, fishing has always been a huge part of my family. I guess I was raised in a fishing world ever since I was a kid. My mom and dad and brother, we fished family walleye tournaments out of our old Spectrum boat at some of the local reservoirs around here. I fished. We didn't have a TV growing up, so I guess the only thing my brother and I could really do was, in our small town, was go to the lakes or creek, and we just were born and raised in the outdoors, and so it's always kind of stuck with me through most of my life. And then just recently, these last probably 7 or 8 years or so, I started kayak fishing, which has become one of my biggest hobbies and something I'm really passionate about. And I started competing about 3 years ago to try to escalate that. And it kind of just took it to a whole new level of appreciation for the sport. So it's a huge part of my life. It kind of dictates my life. I guess you'd say.
And in your first tournament, you took like second place or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, my very first tournament, I bought an old used Jackson Cuda and I fished a local tournament. I got third place, which is pretty awesome. There's some pretty incredible sticks here in Nebraska. So
awesome. 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 Awesome.
Yeah.
So, and you like decided just to like leave the corporate job and just pursue the fishing dream. Like what made you decide that? And, you know, what kind of made you go that route?
A lot of things, actually. I'm part of a family that's completely compromised of entrepreneurs. And so we never really did things status quo.
Sure.
And I was always the one that asked questions and, you know, didn't really follow a lot of guidelines and rules. And so though I loved working in the outdoors industry and I was the hunting manager at a big retailer for a long time. And I loved working with all the guys and tuning bows and having that role. I didn't like punching a time clock and I didn't like the micromanaging and I just didn't really feel like that was my fit.
Sure.
So I said goodbye to that and started my own business, and it kind of just took off from there. And it's one of those things that I'm not made for that 9-to-5. I can't do it. So I thought of every single way possible to avoid ever kind of going back to that role. And I've never really had a desk job, and I found kind of my niche in the outdoors, and I love to write and I love to share my passions, and I'm just going full bore with that. And it's pretty incredible.
No, totally. I mean, we found you on Instagram and that led me to your website, and I just started reading like some of your blog posts and things. And I mean, I thought that was totally fascinating that, you know, you were just like, screw the man, I'm going for it. You did it. And like, you have definitely climbed the success ladder, I would say, in the fishing world, so to speak, and definitely gotten a lot of respect. Just by, you know, I think the biggest problem nowadays, with women in the fishing world is they're taking these raunchy photos with fish mm-hmm. and whatever, and trying to make their way up the ladder. And you definitely didn't do that. And you know, kind of stuck to what you are passionate about and didn't do the corporate thing. That's what definitely drew us to you as a guest tonight. So, you know, kudos for that.
Can I just say something here, Brian?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, man.
Cause like, I have to admit, Christine, I went to your Instagram page and I had instant fish envy. That's all I'm going to say. Like, it was so ridiculous.
I can attest to that too.
You're the real deal, without a doubt.
That's very flattering, you guys.
No. It's awesome. And I'm a big YouTube guy. I don't watch a ton of TV and stuff. I'm always watching fishing videos and hunting videos, camping videos, DIY videos, whatever on YouTube. And it was yesterday. I believe it was Fluke Master. Mm-hmm. I forget that guy's actual name, but
Gene Jensen.
Yeah, Gene Jensen. That's it. Yeah. He was like giving you a shout out because you did so awesome on Lake Erie, and I think that's just cool. You know, like
you were
one of the first people he mentioned, and I think that says a lot. You know, as far as that goes,
I did not know that. That's pretty awesome. Gene's a good guy.
Yeah, no. I watch a lot of his stuff, and you know, he's a very intelligent guy when it comes to fishing and such, but,
definitely.
You know, I thought that was cool, you know, getting a shout out from Gene Jensen. So kudos there.
Thanks. Yeah. He's a good dude.
But, yeah, I mean, I can relate to what you're saying as far as like work goes. You know, I worked for the man for 12 years and then I went out on my own, and now I'm my own entrepreneur, so to speak.
Congratulations. And that's great.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. You know, I've been at it for 4 or 5 years now, and it's just like, it's such a huge, huge difference. It gives me more freedom to do things like this and such. I mean, trust me, I'd like to be fishing full time. Don't get me wrong, like you, but I'm getting there. We'll get there one day.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, lately we've been hearing about all these huge muskies being caught in Nebraska. And, you know, we're in the Midwest as well. We're in Northern Illinois. And, you know, so Muskies, we think like Wisconsin, Minnesota, things like that. I would never think of Nebraska. And then I saw a picture of you just holding this giant, and I was like, where is this? So, I mean, what is the Muskie waters like out in your area? You know, maybe you could go over that and, you know, maybe your tactics for approaching Muskie and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I Muskie fished all over the country, up in Canada. Nebraska definitely provides its own set of challenges because these are not world-renowned Muskie waters. I mean, I used to joke that there are 5 total Muskie in the state, and I've caught all of them like 30 times.
Sure.
So we've got a few hidden gems. A couple reservoirs have some really nice size fish, but it's definitely more challenging. I mean, it's not a species that flourishes here by any means, like they would up north or in some of the big deep southern reservoirs, like Cave Run or Melton here or Dale Hollow or any of the rivers down there.
Sure.
But it's a different, you still apply type of the same type of behavioral tactics, the same, you know, I do a lot of the moon phases. I follow really closely and watching, you know, pre to post funnel and barometric pressure changes and, you know, the pre-spawn, even though a lot of the areas here, the Muskie don't actually spawn, they go through like a false spawn.
Okay.
But the behaviors are still the same. So you apply the same type of tactics that you would, you know, that early spring ice out, you know, I don't usually target them midsummer when it gets pretty hot around here. But then again, that late early fall when the water gets around that 65 degrees and it gets a little more safe to handle them. And they start, you know, moving back and finding that grass that has still is, you know, has most of its life and producing most oxygen, follow the shad, you know, up the creeks and stuff, just your typical, textbook Muskie fishing.
Right.
So
Do you target them, Christine, with topwater or kind of what's your go-to when you're at least searching for them?
It's pretty dependent on the body of water and what the main forage is around here. A lot of our Muskie are stocked in shad lakes. So a couple of my go-tos in Nebraska, I will throw a little top water. I only have action on that usually in the early mornings, like right at ice out, actually. Or here in the fall, I'll do a little bit of top water stuff. But my main go-to, we've got a lot of big laydowns that in some of these big reservoirs here, some of the lakes or these rocky points. I love throwing the Lungeon 22 short, the 22 long, bumping cranks off of the laydowns and along the rocks. Or just burning blades. I mean, that's always effective about anywhere you go.
Right.
And the Medusa, I love, like, when it gets a little bit, like your April, May, I love getting those big plastics out, working glides. It just completely depending on the time of year. And I'm known to switch baits 1,000 times if I feel like.
Sounds like me, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yep. You got to let the fish tell you what they want at that given time. But here it seems that if you keep it simple, that's typically better. You know, I usually don't throw big blades around here. I'll throw like, you know, 8s or sometimes 9s or big arm spinners.
Sure.
Keeping it pretty simple. We just don't have the type of fishing that you're going to find. Like, I'm going to Cave Run here in about 2 weeks and it'll be a whole different ball game for me.
Sure.
For what I'm going after.
Yeah, we were talking about some of our trips we took just recently on another pod, and when I was up in Canada, man, I was on Eagle Lake, and they literally
fished Eagle.
Did you really?
Yeah.
No way.
Where'd you stay? Andy Myers Lodge.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've heard of it for sure.
Yep,
I was down at Century. So
okay, gotcha.
So the southern end, but yeah, what was interesting was everyone was saying how you didn't need to use massive lures. You know, mm-mm. You could use medium to small size bucktails and get the same.
Oh
results.
Yeah, like the Joe Bucher, the Bucher tail. That thing
you
is, that thing's a killer. I mean, you can just, and it's the cadence that really makes a huge difference. I found
for sure.
So you get for those sure. higher geared reels that, you know, like that Trank brings in. I think 42 inches per turn, and you can have that thing screaming across the water, and they just can't stand it. That's a game changer.
For sure, for sure. So on Lake Erie, I mean, you just finished a tournament there. Yeah. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the tournament, kind of the challenges and kind of what you experienced out there.
Right. So Erie, that's my first time fishing Erie. I never thought I'd go and fish bass on Erie. I grew in walleye are my roots, so I thought it'd be, you know, I always would fish walleye there. And so
you're talking my language.
Yeah. I never expected I'd go to Erie to fish for bass, but that is what happened. The biggest challenge was, you know, obviously, well, there were two of them, I would say. New body of water. I had to fly in, so I didn't have my boat, my kayak, or my Elite 9 TI. I fish Lowrance and the Elite 9 TI with a total scan transducer, and I rely very heavily on side imaging.
Sure.
When I'm looking for, you know, with smallmouth especially, I'm looking for boulders or rocks or, you know, deep grass. You know, when I can look 100 feet out either way, I can cover so much more water and break it down so much quicker. Well, I didn't have that. I had to bring just my head unit, but I didn't have the transducer.
Ooh.
So I was limited to down and just your sonar and GPS. So that was tough. That made it really difficult for me to utilize my electronics and break that water down. And I only had a day to pre-fish.
Oh.
Yeah, I basically...
Day to pre-fish and take six.
Yeah, I found a pattern. I was limited. I knew that the big bite was going to be on the main lake, and I knew smallmouth were going to win that tournament. But I looked everywhere, and if you weren't there pre-fishing for a few days, or you didn't live on the lake, like Dave LaFribre, that Elite Series Pro that, you know, took home that 10 grand.
Yeah. He lives right on the lake.
He lives right on the lake. Yep. And so he was out with his bass boat pre-fishing, and I mean, he was just on top of it. That guy's a phenomenal angler, and he knew what the smallmouth were doing and where they were. The other guys that found the smallmouth were locals. So it kind of made it a little bit challenging, but I was able to find a really good pattern in deep grass in Presque Isle Bay and produce pretty good limits. With the exception of the second day, my area got pretty crowded, and it just didn't support like I was hoping it would. I needed one more good fish to put me second or third, but you know, that's fishing. So I always a little tougher on myself than probably everybody else is.
Yeah, no. What town did you guys go out of?
Erie.
What town? It was in the town of Erie?
Yep. The town of Erie.
Okay. Gotcha. You know, 'cause I've fished a walleye tournament out of Huron. So I'm looking at a map here. You know, it's pretty close to where, you know, you guys were going out of. But,
right.
I mean, the one tournament I fished out there was in October. And pre-fishing, there was like 4-foot rollers. And then the day of the tournament, it snowed. So that was interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But, no, that's totally cool. So, I mean, you had a day to pre-fish, and then tournament day, you just kind of stuck with your guns and –
Yeah.
What did you come in with lengthwise?
The day one, I put up 85 3/4. Freebury had 88, I believe. And the one of the guys, a local, put up 91, but he didn't get a limit day two, so he kind of dropped out of it. But I did that in largemouth, and I did luck into one smallmouth that happened to be cruising through that deep grass. But I fished the bay, and I put up 83 or 84 within an hour. I mean, I was on good fish. I put up a good limit, and I said, if I'm going to win this tournament, I'm going to have to find some big smallmouth in the main lake. So I went back out to the main lake, spent 3 hours out there just searching and searching, and I couldn't find anything. So I came back to the bay and ended up upgrading a couple fish and put me at fourth. And I was leading most of the day, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome for only a day of pre-fishing on, on a lake you've never fished, let alone.
Yeah, well, that felt pretty good.
Well, that's another thing too that I have an interest in is like, how do you even break down a body of water before, you know, you've never fished on before, let alone Lake Erie? I mean, like, you know, it's like me going to Lake Michigan and like, okay, drop a kayak in and get after it. Like, seriously?
Yeah,
so how do you approach that even?
Well, you think about bass fishing and you break it down. It's like, what time of year is it? What are they doing? What are they feeding on? Where is the bait? And what I found is that there were a lot of shad and a lot of bait that were still in Presque Isle Bay. I'd mark bait balls kind of suspended in like 12 to 15 foot of water. And then I found that whole bay has got really good grass in certain areas. And so what I found, I use a swim bait presentation. I use like a Kytec on like a weightless Kytec up shallow, or I'd Carolina rig it, or I would do I threw a jackhammer a little bit when it was real windy and choppy and put like a 3/8 Kytec on that. And when that kind of slowed down and the sun got up and it got a little more pressured, I threw a smoke shad Senko on a 16-pound Texas rig in the grass. And I caught fish all day. They were in the grass and they were feeding. And there was definitely a pattern there. And there were some good fish there, some good fish caught there. There were just a lot of people in the bay that didn't find anything on the main lake either. So it was tough.
So when you say the main lake, were they trying to work like the rock bottom in deeper water, or kind of what were they doing?
So from what Dave said, the guy that was leading day one found him in deeper water, but Dave gave a little speech at the end and said those smallmouth have started to transition small or shallow. And last week they weren't. They were in that 30 foot and there was those big 20, 21 inchers, but they had it all changed in that week, and you had to be on that bite, and he was on it. So he stayed on top of them, and he was catching them, I think, in 12, 13 foot of water, so a little more shallow. And usually, from what we had read and heard, that they would be in that 30 foot of water. But
what was the water temp? Do you remember?
Yep. So 60, 68 in the morning, about 71, 72 for a high.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, because they usually like it a little cooler. And maybe the water temp changed or something between the weeks. Who knows?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was. I would have really liked I didn't come to Erie to fish for a largemouth, but that's all I had. I had to make it work, unfortunately.
So were the tournament rules for either, as long as it was bass?
Yes,
was
any bass species, yep, is we were good by that. But I think everybody kind of knew that smallmouth were probably going to win that tournament.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So have you ever done any fishing, you know, and or muskie fishing in St. Clair or that same area?
Oh, yeah.
Out there? Yeah.
St. Clair is a
crazy.
Yes.
Right?
That is one of my, I don't like fishing metro lakes very much, or urban lakes, but St. Clair is one I can get down with anytime.
Interesting.
Yeah. You have the potential of catching a trophy of any species in that entire lake. I mean, it's just an absolutely incredible fishery. I'm going to go up there. I'm hoping to get up there in November and go after muskie when there's a good Bondi bait bite there.
Have you ever been out to Hartson's Island?
I have not.
Okay, you've heard of it though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy smally.
Yes.
As well. Yeah. It's all kind of in the same area. I'm in the wrong location. I'm in the wrong state, Brian.
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, you have. That's true.
Yeah, I can't say I fished in Illinois before.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah. I mean, we got our own few hidden gems, so to speak. But I mean, Illinois isn't really known for, any particular species unless it's Asian carp coming up the Illinois River.
Yay.
Yeah, right. But
you can't make them look like bass when you're in a tournament. I've tried.
No.
Yeah, no.
Spray paint, none of it works.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Those things are awful.
our fishing all lies to the north border there.
Once you
get over that north border, it really starts to heat up. You know, with muskies being talked about, have you fished Green Bay for muskies?
I haven't. I would love to. I've been told by a lot of people that needs to happen. Hopefully that'll be on the list here in the next year or so.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I mean, I personally don't musky fish, but I walleye fish up there quite a bit. And we have some friends that, you know, musky fish up there. They're speed trolling and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
They've had days where they've boated 30, 40 muskies and the smallest one's like 40 inches. So Green Bay is such a healthy fishery. And, I mean, especially you mentioned you love walleyes. I mean, you mm-hmm. have a great chance at a 30 plus incher up there in the fall.
Yeah.
No doubt. I've been up there twice in like the past month and a half and, you know, caught a slew of 24 to 26 inch walleyes, with a few 28s. That I haven't personally caught, but a friend of mine, he fishes the MWC circuit up there out of the big boats.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get up there quite a bit, but no, I was just curious on your take on Green Bay on muskies, if you had done it or if you had plans for it, but
will happen soon. I mean, yeah. talking muskie and wallow, that's pulling at my heartstrings. I mean, those yeah. two fish are that's what I'm all about right there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little time. I mean, I wanted this year to really go after tournament fishing, and I wanted to gain the respect there and prove that not only do I take, you know, good pictures with these big fish, but I know what I'm talking about. That was my big goal this year. There's a lot of people out there that are, you know, celebrity famous on whatever social media outlet they have, and their content is lacking in so many ways. And I didn't want to fall. I didn't want to get lost in that stereotype.
No, I hear you. And I think you've proved yourself quite a bit this year, especially because you've had like what, 8 caches or something? Yeah.
I'm very humbled and I'm very happy with this year, but it's not over yet. I've got a couple more very big tournaments that I'd really like to do well at too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, keep it going. Whatever you're doing is working. So
thanks guys.
Yeah. No worries. No worries. So, I mean, let's maybe talk a little bit on how you got into the guiding aspect of things. Maybe some struggles and stuff you had with that, and you know how much you enjoy it, and you know just your all around guiding experience.
Okay. I started guiding for Marty approached me after my first tournament and just kind of asked if, you know, he's been guiding, gosh, he's like the godfather of kayak fishing in the Midwest here, he's been guiding for a long time, and asked if I had any interest. And I said, absolutely. I've always kind of liked sharing my passion with other people and getting people introduced to it. Cause the thing that, you know, drives me crazy is seeing all these people buried into electronics these days and not taking advantage and, you know, seeing all the outdoors has to offer.
Sure.
So, initially there were some challenges. I mean, obviously with being a female comes its own set of, you know, like I said, stereotypes and assumptions. And there were some guys that would message Marty and say, are you available or can we, yeah. And he said, look, like if you, he was great in the fact that he really had my back and he really believed in me. And the ones that gave me a chance would, you know, message back to him and say, we're so happy we went out with her. And, you know, we caught so many fish and we had this great experience. And it was really, the more I pushed through that, the more rewarding it was. And I started to kind of build up a reputation there that, I hope will continue to follow me along, as I go and as I continue to hopefully do some guiding kind of across the country. I'm always going to have those challenges. There's no doubt about that. That's just something that I've learned to kind of swallow and deal with, but that's okay. You know, it makes me want to work harder and just do better and, you know, get people on the fish of a lifetime when I can and be part of that.
Yeah. I think that alone right there says a lot, you know, about you and your character for sure. And I mean, you know, obviously your reputation, you know, proves everything you say. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I know from my experience, anytime I take a woman fishing, mm-hmm. I get my butt kicked. So, I mean, that's just the way it works out.
Yeah.
And it's usually my 14-year-old daughter.
That's so awesome.
You know, which is great. But
is she close right now? Give her an air high five from me.
No, she's at her tumbling practice this evening, but I'll let her know when okay. she gets home.
Awesome.
So I was telling her about you and she's like, oh, I'll check that out, Dad. So I think it'll be pretty inspiring to her because, you know, she is a little girlish, but you know, she does have that fishing in her and the kayaking. I mean, she just loves being outdoors, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I'm like
super grateful for that, no doubt.
Most definitely.
So I mean, I guess you said you're hitting the road. So, I mean, what's your plans for that? You're just going to tour the country and maybe like do some guiding trips here and there or?
Couple different things. So I just got engaged back in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I met my fiance at a bass fishing tournament, so like-minded individuals, it works out great. So we are going to move into I just bought a house 11 months ago and lo and behold I'm renting it out already and leaving. So we are going to move into a travel trailer toy hauler. And he actually is a rep for a kayak fishing or for a kayak fishing brand. And we are going to just fish tournaments, sell kayaks. I've got a couple gigs writing for some outdoor publications. So we are both able to work remote. And we're just going to kind of call home wherever home happens to be in that particular area we find ourselves in at that time.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I think you're my long lost sister or something.
That wouldn't surprise me.
That's awesome. I'm actually I'm in the process of converting my old cargo trailer into a camper trailer, and we're gonna put paddle and fin stickers on it and take a bunch of fishing trips and stuff. So like,
awesome.
I mean, you're speaking our language right now.
We're
like deep into that right now, but
isn't it great? I mean, just kind of simplifying and minimalizing things and getting back to what really is important in life.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we all get caught up in life struggles for sure, but you know, being able to just let loose and I mean, what you guys are doing is awesome.
Yeah.
So here's the question, and we can edit this out. Who's the better fisherman?
Well, if you want to need to get into,
you don't have to answer.
Can I block him in the?
you can plead the fifth on that one.
Okay.
You know,
I will. I will tell you. You can go and look at all of our tournaments and see who's beat who and every single one. No, he actually beat me at Erie. And this is the first time this year he beat me in a tournament.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How'd that go over?
He's actually an incredible angler, and he's fishing for the KBF, the 10. It's the 10 best anglers in the nation that chase that.
Cool. Yep.
So he was sitting in sixth in that, and he needed a good open finish to kind of coal another open he didn't do as well in. And I was not chasing the KBF angler of the year. I had a local club I really wanted to do well on this year. But he was, and so this place really helped him and should secure that top 10 invitation to Bienville Plantation in Florida. So I was really happy for him that he
That's
sat
awesome.
There and he beat me this time, and I couldn't be more happy for him for that.
Very cool. Very
That's
cool.
So awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Christine, if you don't mind, could you talk a little bit about your kayak setup? And yeah, feel free to just kind of. What are your go-tos? What are the things you like, you don't like, all that kind of good stuff?
So when I don't fly into tournaments, I have my Pro Angler, Hobie Pro Angler 14. I fish in a lot of different kayaks, and this one is by far the most incredible fishing platform, I think, on the market.
Interesting. Why do you think that?
Several reasons. For one, I mean, I used to paddle, and where I am kind of a purist, and I like the challenge of things. Like, I was killing myself trying to fish and paddle at the same time. So the pedal drive system right there alone makes any kayak out there, I think, more conducive to fishing.
Sure.
But with the Pro Angler, see, I'm a super unorganized person. And when I'm sitting there flipping through bait, it's like I like to have a big deck space. I like that that thing is like, it's super wide, so I can stand up, I can walk up and down it. I can, if I snag my safety flag in the back with a big Medusa, I can literally walk to the back and unhook it and walk back up, work big baits. I can figure eight comfortably. I have no issues with any stability. The rod storage is phenomenal. Like, I can get, I bring 11 to 12 bass rods with me when I'm fishing a tournament.
No way.
Not even kidding.
In the kayak?
In the kayak, yep. And they're all not just in the kayak. I get them along the sides in the rod storage. So all my nicer rods are protected when I put them back in there and don't leave them in the back of my H-grade. So,
the rod
storage is phenomenal.
They actually run along the sides?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So do you have rod holders like with a black pack kind of thing, or is that not needed at all?
Not needed, but I do have on the H crate, there is four rod holders on each corner. You can stick a rod there. And okay. If I want to be switching back, you know, back and forth really quick, I sometimes leave a couple rods back there.
Gotcha.
But for the most part, like when I travel and I do a lot of tournaments by myself and I have a trailer. And so it's really nice that when I'm, you know, trying to make it back to check-in time, I can back my trailer in, load my boat up and all my rods and my everything can literally ride in my kayak and I'm gone. Like it makes it super easy and really quick to load and unload. And the storage is phenomenal. The front hatch is huge. I have two big tubs of plastics that I put under my seat, which is, it works out really, really well. So literally a lot of my stuff that I am using, is right there in my kayak at all times.
Right. Easily accessible too. Awesome. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And that's huge. You know,
it absolutely is. And the stability, I think, is the second thing, especially if you're musky fishing, right? Do you spend most of the time standing, obviously, when you're musky fishing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first year I fished out of a Jackson Cuda and I couldn't stand, and I caught 6 or 7 musky in that thing. It was a nightmare.
That was me, sorry.
Okay. Sorry. It's like, whoa.
I forgot to unplug an air compressor in the garage. My apologies to
everyone.
That's
okay. I'm awake.
Yeah, me too. Trust me.
I just had a grabber, Brian. Thanks.
Yeah, I just jumped 3 feet out of my seat because it's like 2 feet behind me. I apologize.
Yeah. Was that trout barking in the background?
Yeah, no, that wasn't him barking. That was that was the air compressor. Sorry about that.
No worries.
But
we run a very tight ship here, Christine, as you can see. It's like a Swiss watch.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I remember to silent my phone and everything else. I forgot the air compressor. You know, it's not something that always comes up.
That's true.
So what do you think of the Mirage Drive? I guess I'd like to get, I've never been in a Hobie. I hear they're amazing. What do you think of, like, for instance, with weed management and things like that? I guess how would you rank it to probably some of the other, have you done any other pedal drives you can compare it to?
I have. And what the biggest thing with the pedal drive is that it's the best with the weed management, because whereas like your bicycle style, like cyclical drives, the weeds and stuff will get kind of caught up in that and you have to pull it out and pull it out of there. With the Mirage Drive, you're in some really thick stuff. All you got to do is lift your drive up and that stuff falls right down. It doesn't get wrapped up around, you know, and entangled in that. You don't have
interesting.
It's by far, because it kind of flushes a lot of it away. I mean, I saw a lot of guys struggle at lacrosse when it was all overgrown on Alaska, fishing a big tournament up there. A lot of guys in that type of drive could not get to areas that we were getting in with the Mirage Drive.
Interesting.
That's super interesting. Yeah.
That's a huge benefit to that.
How's that reverse work?
It works great. Yeah. Some people, you know, will complain that you have to, you know, pull something to go in reverse. Honestly, it's not a big deal. The drive is so foolproof and easy to maneuver that I've got no issues with that at all.
From the videos I've seen, it's pretty quick.
You know, very cool. Yeah, it's nothing. It's nothing.
Got you.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid boat. I'm really happy with it, for sure.
No, I love the rod storage aspect. I just recently got a Bonafide SS-127, and I can stuff, like you said, 10 or 11 rods in my front hatch. And that's so huge, you know, especially, you know, a lot of guys throwing rods in the back of their cars, breaking rod tips, stuff like that. You don't have to worry about that stuff when you can put your rods in your boat. It's so huge.
That is the biggest. Like when I've paid so many G Loomis expedited fees of $125 that you can only do it so much. The rep knew me by name after like the 6th one. So he's finally like, all right, I'm just going to send you one. You can just waive this fee. Been through enough. So,
oh man.
Brian was talking about me right there, about breaking rods and throwing them in the back seat.
Yep, I hear you. I mean, I've been there.
He was talking about me. Yeah.
I was trying to be kind and not mention your name.
Everybody knows, dude.
Yeah. Oh,
that's funny.
That's okay. That's definitely me, too. I mean, I've been there.
That's awesome. So you're a ball cap aficionado.
Yes, I am. As you can probably tell from my Instagram, I kind of live in one of those things.
Scott can attest, I pretty much sleep in my hat and wear one all day. And my wife, it was funny because the other day I just recently got a Bonafide hat in the mail. And my wife's like, you need another hat? And I was like, well, yeah, this one matches my boat.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, like, I don't do the shoe thing, I do the hat thing. So
that's awesome. I love it. I love it. So you're a hunter as well.
I am.
I know on your website, it looks like you're hunting a lot of turkeys, right? Mm-hmm. And ducks and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, how much hunting do you do? What do you hunt for? Things like that.
I actually guide turkey hunts.
Okay.
I take a lot of women out. I've had a lot of them reach out to me through social media, and just, you know, be very intimidated about getting into the sport. And if they genuinely want to learn about it, I love nothing more than to, I took a gal out this year from West Virginia, and I took a gal from, a local town out the year before that and got them their first turkey, and just the two of us. And it was a really cool experience. I bow hunt. I always let them use my shotgun for the first time, because bow hunting is a whole different ball.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to turkey. But I love turkey hunting. I've done that for years and years. I love waterfowl. I, unfortunately, with the tournament fishing, it has really cut into my hunting this last year, and it is looking like it'll do that this year also. I'm hoping to get out in the stand and get a, you know, get a doe or two to, you know, fill a freezer here pretty quick, because I the biggest thing for me is I love to hunt. I love to be out there in the woods and, you know, on the lake, and I like the aspect of knowing where my food comes from. I mean, that's huge to me.
No, so, I agree. I got into hunting for the same exact reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I strictly bow hunt. So I faced that struggle right off the bat. So I can definitely relate to that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been a big waterfowl hunter, but, no, I saw it on your website and I was like, no, this is something we definitely have to talk about. Yeah. I think that's definitely cool. You know, so I've tried to get my daughter into hunting, and she's like, yeah, no thanks, because I don't want to do the whole thing after I shoot the animal.
Yeah. it's important, I think, to know how to do that, though. And
no, I agree 100%.
Yeah, it'll make, you know, I didn't start hunting until I was in my late teens. So that was saying that my family didn't hunt. We fished. That was our big thing. I got into hunting on my own.
Sure.
So I kind of had to teach myself, and that provided some learning curves, but you know, we all get through that.
Right on.
So Chris, Scott. I was just going to ask you, I'm looking at some of the pictures, and it looks like you do a lot of fly fishing as well.
I do. Yeah.
Have you ever done that out of the kayak?
Yes, I have.
What are your thoughts? It seems like, I mean, I get like all tangled up just on the shoreline. I can't imagine myself in my kayak trying to fly fish. So talk me through that.
Yes. So I am working on, you know, kind of evening out those areas and finding the best way. I fished out of a kayak last year that was specifically designed to fly fish out of.
Okay.
It was a paddle kayak, so that was the only thing that was kind of tough, but the platform was great. There was nothing to get the fly line, you know, snagged on. I have done it in my PA-14, and if I take the drive out and put it in the back, it really isn't too bad. I can strip it right into a bucket.
Gotcha. Oh, nice.
So that works out okay, if I can get it into the bucket and keep it contained, which, you know, isn't always realistic.
Sure.
But I love to fly fish. I taught myself that probably 8 or 9 years ago when I did a lot of solo backpacking and I wanted to fish but couldn't bring, you know, rods and conventional gear into the mountains.
Sure.
So fly fishing is absolutely incredible. It's like the bow hunting of the hunting world. You know, it's that takes you the extra step closer and gets you a little bit more intimate with your surroundings and with the experience. And it's that much more of a challenge. So naturally I was drawn to that very quickly. And even more so like in the kayak, you take two things that are difficult and put it together. And I mean, you've got a whole nother thing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I'm very similar to you as far as fly fishing. Like, you know, during the spring and the fall, the steelhead and the salmon run into the rivers out of Lake Michigan out here.
Right.
And, you know, I, on a forum or something, read that, you know, the salmon were running, guys were hitting them on fly rods. So I went to like some big box store, bought a $35 fly rod to give it a shot, caught a 17-pound salmon. And I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. So, you know, obviously
that is awesome.
Upgraded from there. I haven't quite caught a 17 pounder again. I've gotten close, But, you know, then it spawned off, you know, going, you know, I fly fished out in Colorado and such. And I can totally agree. I mean, you put that so well, like fly fishing is the bow hunting of fishing.
Right.
And I haven't tried it out of my kayak yet, but that, trust me, that thought's been jumping around up there, you know, in my head. And yeah. I think it'll definitely be an awesome challenge. So,
oh, yeah, most definitely.
Like, where you're at in Nebraska, do you guys have trout streams near you, or are you traveling a distance to go fish trout?
I travel a distance to fish trout.
Okay.
There are a couple hidden, you know, little local spots that have some stalkers in some areas. But for the most part, you know, why I like fishing for trout is the mountains. Like, I love the scenery. Sure. I love the atmosphere and the air, and, you know, the seclusion and the solitude that you get with what comes from that. Nebraska doesn't, well, it does have its own different kind of beauty. It's not what I think of when I'm thinking about fly fishing.
Trust me, from a guy that drives to Colorado like once a year, Nebraska is the worst state to drive through. No offense.
Well, hey, don't be sleeping on Iowa. Iowa is 10 times worse than Nebraska.
Yeah. Brian, have you been in Illinois yet?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the same pretty much once you get west of 39. But I hear you. So are you traveling west then out to like Colorado, Utah, Wyoming to fly fish? Or?
Yes. My favorites, I mean, we just got back from the Gunnison.
Nice.
Incredible. Like the Black Canyon area. That was such a neat deal. My spots that I go to Calgary by Banff National Park in Canada, Bozeman, Big Sky, Montana, the Grand Tetons around Jackson, Wyoming and the Bighorns, the New River around West Virginia. That was an incredible fly fishing scene. Those are kind of some of my, and then down, I did some fishing in Marble Canyon, in Arizona. That was pretty neat. It was a beautiful trip down there. I go to a little tiny island south of the Bahamas for bonefish, and I rent a little boat from some locals and go out, and I have yet to get one on my own. It's tough, but I've caught a couple bonefish on the fly. I hired a local guide down there, and the last few years I've just gone by myself and rented a boat and, you know, tried to stock the flats with my 9-weight, trying to get one on my own. But those things are a whole different animal. So that has yet to happen by myself.
That's awesome.
Not more.
That is awesome. I've never fished saltwater, but, you know, my bucket list is fly fishing for tarpon down in the Keys.
Yes, that like... you and me both. Yep, you and me both.
I drool over that type of stuff, but yeah, that's pretty incredible. I can definitely dig that.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Normally when I'm fly fishing, I'm going Colorado River up by Granby area. And then I've fished the Blue River down in Silverthorne and Dillon area as well.
Okay.
And that Blue River area is just unbelievable for rainbows. I mean,
Blue River.
Yeah. I've caught my biggest rainbow on a fly rod down there, and we did the same thing. We hired a guide because we had never fished it down there, and the Blue kind of comes out of the Dillon Reservoir there, so they have like this this freshwater shrimp. It's called a Mrs. Shrimp. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they nymph those a lot during the winter months, and then their dry fly action, like, it's so crazy. This river runs right through downtown Silverthorne, and you'll catch the biggest rainbow of your life in there. I mean, it's common for a 10-pound rainbow to be caught down in that area.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And the browns are just as big and beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I'll recommendation.
To add that to the list,
yeah, okay, next time it's you're noted. Out there. Yeah, yeah, duly noted.
That's awesome.
Christine, have you ever gotten into actually the fly tying when we were talking about the fly fishing? Is that something you ever got into, or?
I've wanted to. As you probably can tell, I have a never ending list of hobbies.
Sure.
And that was one that, I mean, I can't even tell you how many stuff that I've invested all this time and effort and energy into. Sure. And I have always wanted to do that. Now, when I find enough time to be able to sit down and sit still for long enough, that is something that I, you know, I think when people get older and they start to knit, I think I'll get older and tie flies.
Yeah.
That's going to be my thing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll give you one recommendation. Start with big lures and then work your way down to the number 22s and 24s.
Okay. Yeah. Those little ones look very intimidating.
Trust me. I think I'm partially blind from tying those things. So. Okay. But, yeah, no, it's definitely an art form. I got into it pretty heavy when I started fly fishing a lot. I haven't tied as of lately in probably the past year or so, but you know, it's usually every time we're heading out to Colorado, I tie a bunch of stuff up, but it's definitely different. It's an art form, but it's so cool. Like I built my fly rod. I tied my flies. The only thing I didn't make was my reel and my line. And there's just something to be said about that when you can catch a fish in that form.
Awesome.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. That's just my own thing, but you know,
that's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
Sure. I can't even imagine. That's great.
Definitely. So it's cool. I would definitely recommend it when you get some time.
Yeah. it is on the list.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Scott, you got anything else to add to this or?
No, man. I'm still looking at these pictures, Christine, and I'm totally envious. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, those smallmouth pictures that you awesome. Have up on your Instagram, is that in Nebraska?
That is not. That's actually in South Dakota. I did a little trip. This was the first fun fishing trip I actually got to do almost all year. You would have normally, like last year, I had so many more, you know, of the cool, quote unquote, cool fish, the musky, the big pike, the big walleye and stuff, but I wasn't able to do that this year with the focus on tournament fishing. I kind of, you know, the cool stuff kind of took a backseat to one of my biggest goals. So hopefully this fall, you'll be able to see. I'll be tackling some serious musky fishing and having a little bit more fun.
Nice.
Upcoming.
So I guess I do have another question for you. You mentioned earlier about using side finding on your depth finder?
Side imaging.
Yeah, side imaging. So
yep.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because we just had a podcast or two where we had a couple guests on. We were talking specifically about depth finders and features and what to look for and that kind of thing. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the side imaging and kind of how you use it.
Yeah, absolutely. So side imaging, I think a lot of people make the mistake of using side imaging to find their fish. I think that makes it a little bit more difficult. I think what side imaging is the most useful for is finding, your structure. finding the things that fish relate to, you know, finding humps out in the middle of the lake that aren't marked on your chart or any of your graphs, looking for grass, weed lines, you know, boulders. I basically will just cover water. And I will run nothing but my side imaging and I'll just look. And it's a little more difficult in a kayak. As you know, with side imaging, you need to be going in a straight line and maintain a certain speed to really have that be effective. But once you kind of get that dialed in and you're cruising, I mean, I can look and, you know, make waypoints just as I'm going along on stuff. And then I can go back to that waypoint, go over it and see exactly what it is and, you know, whether or not it's worth targeting. And I can break down water so fast with that. I mean, I rely heavily on side imaging.
So I get really confused when I look at the image of side imaging because it's like a line down the middle and you've got two images on either side. But as you're moving, like, how does that relate? You know what I mean? I'm confused.
So you need to basically, if you printed off a piece of paper of what you're seeing and folded it, that's what you're looking at. So that in the middle, that is your water column. And your boat is that line.
I see.
So it is, you know, my fiance doesn't use it because he doesn't understand it as well either. So it's like,
me and him have to talk.
I know. And it's one of the most useful tools, but it's like anything else, you know, once you understand it and know what you're looking for, you've like unlocked the mega secret of bass fishing. Exactly. Sure. You've got it. But you need to just, what I did is years ago, it kind of helped because I worked in the industry where, you know, I was around this stuff all the time, but watching some videos or just the best thing is just getting out there with someone that knows how to use it. And sure. Just having them sit with you and say, this is what you look for. This is what this is. This is how, you know, you can see when it gets, you know, a little lighter color, that's obviously it's coming up and you're getting shallow water, and you can kind of see where there's cuts in the bank. And ledge fishing is huge, like in Kentucky Lake, eliminating productive ledges or unproductive ledges pretty quickly. It's just a phenomenal feature if you're able to know what you're looking at.
Well, you know what's funny is, I mean, Brian, that's exactly what we were talking with Scott Purs when he was on the pod, etc. You know, use the depth finder to find structure. You know, you're not really looking for fish per se. I mean, you can, you know, there's aspects of that, but for the most part, it's looking for structure. Sounds like the exact same thing. Oh,
no, absolutely. I mean, I was one of those guys when I first got a depth finder years ago. You know, I was like, all right, where's the fish? You know, staring at my depth finder, waiting for that red mark. You know, but, you know, obviously it doesn't work that way. But, I mean, that's the biggest thing with depth finders is just locating structure. I mean, we talked about that on one of our recent podcasts when we were fishing a river. I was a bonehead, forgot my depth finder, you know, but, and it was a really rocky river. If we could have, you know, seeing what was down there, look for the big boulders, things like that, we would have found more fish, I think.
Yes.
Without a doubt. We both forgot it, so
yeah.
You're not the only one.
I'm not the only one. Makes me feel better.
It's all about what those fish are relating to.
No, know? For sure. For sure. For sure. So, very cool. So let's wrap this up. Christine is sponsored by Ram Mounts, Hobie Boats, Bending Branches, Lungeon Lures, Caney Fork Outdoors. You got any plugs or you want to throw anything out there, like how people can follow you on social media, your website address, maybe things like that?
Usually people will just find me on my Instagram at Midwest Fisher Gal. I have a link to my blog on that. And I share some pretty good stuff I enjoy to write. So, all my articles will be shared through my Instagram.
No. And I mean, guys, gals, definitely check out her blog. I mean, some of the stuff she writes is just absolutely unbelievable. And definitely had the gears in my head turning for sure. So,
awesome.
I think it's, you know, you definitely share your passion there. And, you know, I think a lot of people could read that and definitely take something home from it for sure. So,
I appreciate that.
Just a quick announcement for all you listeners. We just got some stickers in. So if you guys want a decal or anything, you can email us at paddle, the letter N, in the word fin, at gmail.com. And we'll send you guys some stickers. You can throw them on your kayaks, your cars, whatever. We appreciate everybody's support. We're also looking at doing a run of t-shirts. If anybody's interested in that, please email us as well. You can also get us on Instagram at paddle, the letter N in Finn. And, we just want to thank Christine for being on tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you guys.
Definitely an awesome episode. And, you know, I'm glad that this came together. And I mean, I won't lie, I was a little nervous at first, but, no, I think it turned out great. And I think really everybody, you know, you're definitely an inspiration, especially to the women out there that are, you know, trying to make a name for themselves. So just keep on doing you. And, you know, we wish you the best of luck this year in the KBF and all that stuff. Same with the fiance too. But, you know, we won't tell them that you said you're the better fisher. Yeah. So. All right, guys. So until next time. We'll catch you on the next pod. Who do we got up next, Scott?
We've got a couple guests lined up. One next week's going to be a guy by the name of Steve McGee, who's out of Texas. He does a lot of different types of fishing. He's got a lot of kayak knowledge. We've got Yak Tribe lined up. We've got I think we're booked about 4 weeks out. So we got a lot of good stuff coming.
Awesome. So stay tuned for that, guys. Thank you again, Christine.
You bet. And, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, anytime you're in the Illinois area and you want to check Illinois off your fishing list, hit us up. We'll take you out.
That sounds awesome. I'll take you up on that.
Cool. Yeah, no problem. And yeah, maybe we can catch up with you down the road after you get some traveling under your belt and you guys are traveling around. We'd love to have you back on.
Absolutely. That sounds great.
All right. Till next time. We'll see you guys.
Anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
It's fun to go with, like, just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.